My dad never told me how to live. He lived and let me watch him do it. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you the thought for today. My dad never told me how to live. He lived and let me watch him do it. As youngsters, we did not appreciate our father as much as we could have. We loved him as an object, as an image, as a father, you know, but we didn't know him as a person because he didn't allow himself to be in our life for some reason or other. So he worked a lot, and he took care of the household a lot, and he did a lot of other things. But you see, now, in retrospect, I can see that his teaching was more by example than it was by necessarily telling us things, or I don't know what I'm trying to say here. It was by example and by his word, but not necessarily by his presence, I guess that's what I'm saying. We didn't have his presence so much because he was always so at work and always, you know, on his projects, and our projects were not his projects. However, as I look back now, I see the examples that he made were really quite impressive. For instance, he gave us all these little statements, you know, if you're going to hit a nail, hit it hard and hit it on the head and hold the hammer right and let the hammer do the work, and you just learn how to use your tools well and your tools will do a good job for you. And he said, you never need to make an indentation on the board when you put a nail in. You put the nail in so beautifully that it goes right to the wood itself, but never impresses itself into the wood. Never makes the wood look have an indentation. That's the mark of a poor carpenter. Now, there are countersunk nails, and those are, you put a sort of a plastic cover over them afterwards, and that's another thing. That's another type of project. That's why he would never use that, you never do this, because under certain circumstances you do that. You countersink a nail, and then you put a plastic material on top of it and smooth it off, and it makes a nice painted surface, and it doesn't show any nails through the surface. Some work that you see, the nails show. Now, he showed us that. And we thought, yeah, you know, kids learning. But what he was doing, and what he was doing in a very definite and positive way, was teaching us perfection. Now, we had not thought we were learning perfection. We didn't think we were learning anything. We just thought we were having to do what we were told to do. And, of course, that's what it was, too. We were doing what we were told to do. And what we learned very impressively from my dad was that you don't argue with him. He is the first and the last word. What he says you do, you do. And you do it. And you don't discuss it. And you don't tell him that he's wrong, or you don't tell him that he's right. You just do what you're told to do. Now, that's very autocratic and authoritarian, and it isn't something that goes well with young kids. But we learned that very early in our life. And because we learned it early in our life, all of our lives we've been able to follow directions well, and we've been able to do things that we're told to do without having a lot of antipathy or anger about it while we were doing it. Now, that's a very precious thing to learn. Now, we didn't appreciate that at the time that we were learning it. We had no idea he was teaching us these great esoteric topics and things that were very important to our life. But subtly, and behind the scenes, he was teaching this. Now, he would take his holiday time, which he never had, but he'd take his holiday time, and he'd go out to the lake lot that he had bought for us. And it was an interesting lake lot. It was on the crest of a hill. Actually, the land was holding the lake in. And so we built right on top of that, where the land was holding the lake in. And the back of the house was on the level. You could drive right into the basement of the garage in the basement, and work right there. And then you go up the staircase, and then you're on the level of the lake, and you're at the first level of the house, looking out on the lake. And it was really quite a beautifully done job. Other houses were like that in the area too. But my dad built this all on his holidays or weekends or times that he would get away from his job. And usually he'd bring one or two of his employees along to work for so many hours and then go out fishing and playing around and so forth like that. And us kids and the family would be there and we'd all eat together. Well, we built this house. And I say we because we did a lot of the gopher work, you know, running here and there for the nails and the boards and things that Pop would order from us. And he put in a concrete floor and put in a nice a septic tank there, and he put in a nice garage downstairs and a workbench downstairs, and then the stairs going upstairs, and three bedrooms and a big living room, dining room, and kitchen. Living room, dining room, and kitchen were all one big massive room, and a big, huge, humongous fireplace on one corner of the wall, and made it all with fieldstone. Now, all of these things took a lot of work. Now, for years, we walked on the subfloor. That's the floor underneath the floor. And then he had a job at Mount Mary College where he was to tear down the Mount Mary College administration building and build a new building. Well, now, Mount Mary was not interested in preserving or saving the wood that came out of there or the things that came out. He was just supposed to get it out and get to the dump or wherever he wanted to get rid of it. So he took it out to the lake. And this beautiful flooring from Mount Mary's administration building went into the floor of our living room, kitchen, and bedrooms. And beautiful hardwood floors, just glorious. And then the walls, I don't know what, my memory doesn't call what they were, but they were just normal paneling. And then the railing going down the staircase, he took for the edge of the bar that he had in the basement of our home in Wauwatosa. But everything was used and everything had a purpose. And he built a large garage at our home, and then he built it upstairs in the garage to store all these things that he got so that when the time came to use them, he would have them. And he always took care of things very well. He kept things out from being weathered and being destroyed by the weather, and he taught us to do that. He taught us to take care of our toys and our tools and things like that, never leave them lying around. And I look at my grandson, and he works on his motorcycle outside, and he just leaves his tools and everything out there. The rain comes and messes up his brand new sets of tools and roughs them up, and it doesn't disturb him at all. Well, now, for us kids, raised by my dad, wow, we would have never been allowed to allow one little bit of rust to get on an old, terribly old tool. Of course, most of the tools were old. It was the time of the Depression, and everything was used again and again and again. But these are things that he taught us. And then he taught us another thing, which I think was quite amazing. I had not given it too much thought up to now, but he taught us that the word used brick was a very special word. That meant that that house had a special character to it. Those brick had been used before, and they'd been cleaned, and now were put onto this new house, and it gave it a whole new attitude. Oh, you look at a lot of houses with brand new bricks on them, and you think, isn't that beautiful, and isn't that beautiful, and it's all the same, and nothing, you know, unusual about it. But then you look at a used brick house, and you look at the way the brick was cleaned, and you look at the brick. Each brick was handled by loving hands at least a dozen times before it went into that house. The new brick house would just click, click, click right out of the brick factory and right to them, and only the perfect bricks went in. And so it was a lovely house, perfect to be sure. But it didn't have the love in it that a used brick house had. A used brick house, if you go ever to a used brick house, and you watch for it if you ever have a chance to, and you will just immediately feel the love of that house, because a lot of love, and let's hope it was love, a lot of labor of love went into cleaning those bricks. And us kids, we were expert at cleaning brick. We should take a brick hammer and pluck off the old mortar and do it. We wasted very few brick. We wasted very few brick. And we had took pride in cleaning them. And, of course, these are just things that my dad taught us without our realizing that we were being taught. We were always taught to respect our tools, to respect the equipment we worked with, to not be wasteful, to always clean up our workspace after we had finished doing a job, always leave our workspace more immaculate than the housewife who was going to live in that house or people who were going to live there would ever expect for themselves, but always do the job with precision and immaculately perfection, you know. And of course, perhaps that's one reason I'm such a perfectionist in many ways as it is now. But that's okay. My dad never told me how to live. He lived and let me watch him do it. I told you the story about my dad dealing with many building people, that is, many people building their homes. And he would go to these large breweries, and he would be working on the brewery. And Falk, the large industrial manufacturer, we rebuilt their buildings and their ovens and their various things for smeltering and doing steel work and things like that. And they knew my dad was a man of integrity, and so they often asked him to come and build their homes too. And so he would say, "What do you want?" And they'd say, "Well, you know, what that style, and you just go and build it." And my dad would say, "Well, I don't usually do that. I make a plan, and then I make a estimate of the cost, and then go from there." Well, these people said, "Make your plan, and we'll approve it if you must have us do that. But the estimate of cost, I know you're going to get me the best possible price that you can do." And you see, they put him on responsibility. They put him on responsibility. He did it to himself. But they put him on responsibility to get them the best price, not to schnooker them, you know, not to take advantage of them. And a lot of people, if they were given the freedom to, you know, just carte blanche, go and do what you want, they would spend lavishly and foolishly and putting a greater percentage in their own pocket. But my dad never did that. He was never a great wealthy man, but he was always a very wealthy man. He had always the money that he needed. He had always the credit that he needed. He had always everything that he needed and that he chose to have. But he put money back into projects rather than taking it out. He wanted the project to be an example of his work and his life and his belief more than he wanted the money to come to him from the jobs, although the jobs all paid very well too. And he always took care of his men. His men didn't worship him, but they respected him very highly, and he was right in there with them whenever necessary. If there was a job to be done, and it was a last-minute touch-up thing or other, and he was there, he had his suit on and his tie and so forth and his proper hat and coat, and he'd get right in there with his good clothes on, helping the guys finish up something they had to do. He never felt superior to anybody, and he taught us this. Never to feel superior. He didn't teach us by saying, "Don't feel superior to somebody." That would go over like a lead balloon. But he showed us by how he lived that he never felt superior. And yet, he could walk with the biggest of the men, with the biggest of the people for whom he built, with the architects like Frank Lloyd Wright, that name that you would know, and other famous architects, and for the famous A.O. Smith. They were one of our major people, the A.O. Smith Manufacturing Company. They were in Milwaukee, there in West Dallas. And the Falk Company and the Miller Brewery and the Budweiser, and you just name all the breweries my dad had been building in parts of them. And then he'd build their lovely homes out in the suburbs of the city that were their very expensive suburbs and very beautifully done. But you see, this is an artistry. This is a mastery. His men worked for him from the time that he first got them until he closed the business. And he had that business open for 18, 20 years, or maybe even a little longer, but it was quite something. You see, this is what our parents do for us. They teach us by how they live, what the principles are we should follow. And when you begin to live according to the principles that your parents teach you, then wonderful things happen in your life. But when you follow the least line of resistance, then you find yourself in trouble. Because following the least line of resistance is going to mean that there's no learning curve there. There's no developing of character. There's no developing of an input of who and what you are. All you're doing is just going from point A to point B without gaining anything, learning anything, building any character within yourself or anything of that nature. But when my dad was on board, we learned, I tell you. He lived and let me watch him do it. My dad never told me how to live. He lived and watched me do it. And let me watch him do it. See, that's real art. That's a real art. I attempted to do that with my son. And I think it went along pretty nicely. But unfortunately, my son's son wasn't living with him during those sensitive years, and he didn't learn those values. And later, it was more difficult to teach him those values. But if we can learn them at our father's knee, so to speak, even though his knee wasn't there very often, if we could learn them at our father's knee, we can have them as indelible in our system and something that we stand by as principle, as truth, and something very wonderful. My dad never told me how to live, but he lived and let me watch him do it. How about you? Do you let people see how you live, and by the way you live, let it be an example to them? That's very important. Because people do look at us. They look at you here in the monastery. They look at you here at the University of Healing. And then they say, oh, everyone is so orderly, so peaceful, so gentle, so kind. And then when they hear us bickering between one another, if we ever do, the image is lost. And they say, well, hell, that's no different than I get every day in life. And why bother participating in that program? So we have to be very careful what kind of an image we project into the world. Bite their tongue before we speak a negative word. And certainly count to 1,089 before you do something which is going to be negative for yourself or the world. Because you are your own father, you know. And you don't tell yourself how to live. You live, and you let the world watch how you live. I love you. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And know that I see you in every beautiful way, because I love you. I love you. I love you.